Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, October 3rd, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Pumpkin Spice James Marino from Broadway Stars. It's October, I can do the Pumpkin Spice, right? The less known of the six Spice Girls.
You are so basic, James. But what is not basic is yesterday's episode of This Week on Broadway, where you had some friendly faces and voices, as it were, but not necessarily the normal crew, where you had two friends come in to help with a really, really cool interview with one of the best up-and-coming playwrights in the theater community. So why don't you give us a little bit of a look at that if people haven't listened to that in their podcast feed yet, James?
If you haven't listened to it, we had Bess Wall, from the playwright from Small Mouth Sounds and a bunch of different wonderful shows. She joined us for about half an hour on This Week on Broadway, and I had to bring in heavy hitters because I couldn't do this one on my own. So we brought in Lindsay Barons from the Maximu podcast.
One of my favorites. I love Maximu.
Yeah, and Jan Simpson from Broadway and Me came in to help me out with the interview, and it was really a lot of fun, very interesting background, and I think that we're going to see a lot more of Bess on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Well, on Broadway for the first time. I don't think she's not had a Broadway show yet, but I think we're going to be seeing her.
Yeah, the buzz for Small Mouth Sounds, I guess no pun intended since nobody talks in Small Mouth Sounds, but it's been phenomenal, and so I'm really interested to hear what happens with her next, because I think the theater community needs people doing things outside the box, and a completely silent play is definitely outside the box, so good for her.
Yeah, we talked about a bunch of Bess's previous plays, all the way back to the 2004 Fringe Festival. She had a show that was in the Fringe. It was her first show that was called Cats Talk Back. And it's about the five cast members from the original Broadway cast of Cats. And they talk about their experience in that. And we talked a little bit about that. And it was really interesting. So please check it out, because I think that we're going to hear a lot from Bess.
Yeah, she's going to have to do an update and add Grumpy Cat into the mix.
I talked about that on Friday, so today on Broadway. Yeah.
But you did have a nice segue into our first story, James. You mentioned her first show was at the Fringe Festival, and last week the New York Fringe Festival announced that after 20 years, it would not be running in 2017. Shelley Birch, who is the president of the board of the present company, which produces the festival, said that this was not the end of the festival by any stretch of the imagination, but instead that they're going to be taking the year off in order to retool and reconfigure what it is they do and focus on how to get even better quality works into the Fringe Festival. And they just didn't think that they could do that while they were planning for the 2017 festival. So they're going to take 2017 off, but they plan on returning in 2018. And Fringe Festivals have become just huge all over the world. The Edinburgh Fringe Festival is one of the preeminent ones. I live here in Orlando, and believe it or not, Orlando, Florida is the home of the longest running Fringe Festival in North America. But Fringe New York, it's in New York, so you know it's going to be one of the best, if not the best. So I'm optimistic that they get something figured out and can move forward in 2018. James, I know this space fairly well. So what is your take on this whole postponement, cancellation, whatever they want to call it?
I think it's really intelligent, and I applaud them for doing it. And the explanation that they've given, as you outlined from the Times article, is I think it's right on the money, because they talk about in the Times article, over the past 20 years, New York International Fringe Festivals has done 3,680 productions, 193 just this last year. There is no time to reinvent yourself, and after 20 years, they do need to reinvent themselves. The market has changed dramatically, as you talked about. There's Fringe Festivals everywhere, and you know, with what they are doing, they have in the scale and the just sheer numbers that they're doing, they need this year off to reevaluate how to make Fringe better. I don't think by any means that this is an end to the New York Fringe, and that it is just a matter of a really smart artistic and financial decision to make sure that Fringe is with us for at least another 20 years. And we'll miss them in 2017, but looking forward to 2018.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I actually think that Lindsay Behrens would be someone to really talk about this, because Maximu definitely embraces all of the things, not just off-Broadway, but off-Broadway. So I'd like to get her opinion on that. I'm sure she'll talk about that on Maximu at some point. But as you mentioned, the New York Times article really shows that this is doesn't seem to be financial, because looking at tax returns from, you know, the most recent years, they've built up a pretty good nest egg running a fairly tight ship of just a handful of full-time employees. So they've got the money to make this work. And I guess if you're going to make changes, you do it when you can, not when you have to. And I think this is great. If it works out like they say and they can reinvent what they do, more power to them, because this is obviously, like you said, such a fertile breeding ground for creative, boundary-breaking playwrights like Bess Wahl, and that if they can bring us more of more artists like her, that's the whole goal.
Yeah, and Maximu's coverage of Fringe has been so deep and awesome. vast that it's been appreciated by many, many people who attend the Fringe Festival, so that we can understand not only what we miss, but what we could also see ahead of time. And this does not mean that Maximu can take off for 2017.
No, they'll still be seeing stuff. Yeah, they'll still be out there.
Okay, next in the news is the end of last week, we heard that New York City started a $5 million fund for women in theater and film.
Yeah, on Thursday, the Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment is going to announce a new 5-part initiative to promote equality behind and in front of the camera in film and television, as well as on stage. This incentive will be, like you said, a $5 million fund that'll be administered over 5 years to help complete projects that are for, by, or about women. This is something that we know that with tax breaks that we've talked about recently, the New York arts community through the office of the mayor has really made an investment in making New York the hub of everything artistic and performing. And this is another way to promote diversity in those ranks, and it's really an interesting step, and one that I think a lot of people will appreciate, and it is richly way past time to have something like this happen.
So the Times says that New York benefits by $8.7 billion to the city's economy last year from the film and television business. $8.7 billion.
With a
which,
B.
With a B. And yeah. So $5 million certainly is a good start. So I'm hoping that this is the type of thing that will lead us to more and more productions and people working in New York to get out of that evil Satan place, Los Angeles, and well, do it all in New York here.
Yeah, Julia Menon, who's the commissioner of the offices or the mayor's office of media and entertainment, said that because of steps that they've been taking with the tax codes and all that stuff, that in 2015 there were 336 films shot in the city. That's up from 242 in 2014. And in 2015 there was also 52 episodic primetime TV shows shot in New York City as well. Those are huge numbers. And as we've talked about, James, because these changes have moved so many of the film productions from Los Angeles to New York City, it does have an impact on the theater community as well, because we have started to see more stage actors appear on screen, whether it's in film or on television, or someone like Christopher Jackson, who's able to do both Hamilton and the TV show Bull at the same time. This is great for theater actors as well. So good luck to them. I think this fund is a drop in the bucket to what the money they have, but it's a good start to promote the diversity of including women in all aspects of theater and film. And if they can jumpstart that even more, that's a boon for everybody.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. Of course, I was just kidding about Los Angeles being evil. I just want to keep people working here in New York, and it's hard when they go out to Los Angeles to do film and television to keep working in New York, and I'm glad you brought that up. So next up, we have a new Shug Avery.
We do. Yeah, speaking of people working that we don't see nearly enough for whatever reason, yesterday was the final performance of Tony winner Heather Headley in her long-awaited Broadway return as Shug Avery in The Color Purple. And tomorrow will mark another mainstem return, this time for another Tony winner, Jennifer Holliday. Before taking over the role of Shug Avery in the Tony-winning production, both Headley and Holliday were last seen on Broadway in the fall of 2001. That, as far as I'm concerned, should be deemed a crime. Headley was wrapping up her Tony-winning run as the title character in Aida, and Holliday was ending a 2.5-month run as Matron Mama Morton in Chicago back in 2001. I guess, technically, Headley did appear as a guest artist in El Divo's one-week Broadway concert in 2013. But we aren't counting that. James, The Color Purple's grosses have been okay, not great, but not awful. So I would love to see this run for as long as humanly possible. One, because it's apparently a fantastic revival. But two, if they're just going to keep bringing back former Tony winners who haven't been on Broadway for a decade and a half and get them back into the Broadway community, let's do it. I'm sure a lot of people could come up with a list of people who need to come back to Broadway and could play Shug.
Jennifer Holliday here is one of those things that Broadway producers should continue to do. And I am telling you that that is a good idea.
Well played.
All right, next up, breaking news. God is a woman, at least in Arizona.
That's true. James, we've talked about David Javerbaum's An Act of God becoming a regional theater staple and likely being one of the most produced plays in regional theater over the coming years now that its successive summers on Broadway are over. We already know that Wesley Taylor will be playing God in Denver coming up later this month. Well, on Friday, we learned that for the first time, this version of the Almighty would be played by a woman. Broadway alum and former Trading Spaces star Paige Davis will channel the Lord Your God from October 22nd through December 4th at two venues in Arizona. She will be directed by four-time Oscar nominee and two-time Golden Globe winner Marsha Mason. The production, which is part of the Arizona Theater Company's 2016-2017 season, will play Tucson from October 22nd through November 12th, then move over to Phoenix from November 17th through December 4th. James, if I recall correctly, you're friends with Paige. What do you think about her being God? Is this appropriate for Paige?
Well, you know who Paige is married to, right?
I do. She is married to, well, Patrick Paige, which is why she didn't change her name to Paige Paige. And he was the voice of God for the Broadway versions of this show.
And he also just wrapped up playing Satan at New York Theater Works.
In Hadestown. In Hadestown, right?
Hadestown, yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is just awesome. I love that Paige is doing this, and I probably won't get out to see it. I hope that that we can see a short clip or a promo of it online somewhere.
I'll be interested to see who they cast as the angels, because when it was Jim Parsons and Sean Hayes on Broadway, the angels were men. I think if you're going to cast Paige Davis as God, you probably should cast some female angels too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're named Michael and Gabriel, but who cares?
Michelle and Gabriella.
Nah, so. Just leave them as they are. Who cares? It's heaven. You can be whoever you want to be.
All right. What's up in this week's schedule?
Well, like we've said before, now that we're getting into the fall season, we are starting to get more and more shows beginning previews and opening up. And that begins really in earnest on Tuesday when Viet Gone begins previews at MTC. This new play, directed by May Adralis, runs through November 27th at New York City Center and is produced in association with South Coast Repertory. A modern twist on the All-American love story, Quine Nguyen's new play Viet Gone is the classic story of boy meets girl, except this boy and girl are refugees from the Vietnam War, newly settled in a relocation camp inside Middle America. From there, the play skips through time and around the globe to present a fresh, theatrical take on a moving account of one real family's story. We will have a link to the show's page in the notes at BroadwayRadio.com if you want to learn more or get tickets, as we will for every show we talk about here in the schedule. The next night really gets fun, as the quote new unquote Irving Berlin musical Holiday Inn officially opens at Roundabout Studio 54 Theater, featuring a great cast, including Tony nominee Bryce Pinkham, Corbin Blue, Laura Lee Geyer, Megan Lawrence, Megan Sikora, and the legendary Lee Wilcoff. Directed by Gordon Greenberg, who also co-wrote the book with Chad Hodge, the musical is an adaptation of the 1942 Academy Award-winning film of the same name and features a fantastic score by Irving Berlin. The show is appropriately scheduled to run through the holiday season and to close on January 15th. James, I assume you'll be seeing this within the next week or so?
I will, absolutely. I'm unsure of when I'm going to be seeing it. Let me see my schedule. If it's really quickly here, I'm seeing it on Thursday, October 13th.
Oh, cool. So I'll look forward to that. Like we said, I get Holiday Inn and White Christmas confused all the time. So be interesting to see if anyone else can make sense of which one's which.
So The Roads to Home is up at Primary Stages.
Yeah, also opening on Wednesday will be the off-Broadway revival of Horton Foote's The Roads to Home at Playwrights Horizons. Directed by Michael Wilson, the play stars Tony winner Harriet Harris and Drama Desk winners Devin Abner and Hallie Foote, Horton's daughter. The production celebrates the centennial of Foote's birthday and follows three women who have all moved to Houston and are now grappling with the question, what is home? The show is scheduled to run through November 6th at the Cherry Lane Theater. Then fast forward a few days and we get a couple other interesting shows beginning performances. The first is Les Liaisons d'Angeroux beginning previews on Broadway, and I will be looking forward to when I don't have to say that anymore. This star-studded revival is a quasi-transfer from London's Donmar Warehouse, where it was directed, as it will be on Broadway, by Josie Rourke. The show stars Tony winners Janet McTeer and Liev Schreiber in the play by Christopher Hampton, and they are joined by the phenomenal Mary Beth Peel and Birgit Hort Sorensen, who was one of the stars of Das Sound Machine in Pitch Perfect 2. The show is scheduled to run on Broadway through January 22nd, and I'm always interested about these shows that seem to get revived every 5-6 years. It doesn't seem, I think the last one was in 2008, so I'm interested to see how this one does. I know it's a really inventive production that Josie Rourke did over in Donmar, or at the Donmar, which is much smaller than a Broadway theater, but these shows that seem to be cycling through, like Glass Menagerie or whatever that we see all the time, I'm interested to see how people approach this one. Also on Saturday, Lincoln Center's LCT3 begins performances of the world premiere of Samuel D. Hunter's new play, The Harvest. Starring Gideon Glick, the play takes place in the basement of a small evangelical church in southeastern Idaho, where a group of young missionaries is preparing to go to the Middle East. One of them, a young man who has recently lost his father, has bought a one-way ticket, but his plans are complicated when his estranged sister returns home and makes it her mission to keep him there. All tickets to LCT3 shows are $30, and the show is scheduled to run through November 20th. Now, James, not on the schedule for this week of theatrical openings is the Soho Reps show My Name is Gideon, I'm Probably Going to Die Eventually, which was supposed to open on Thursday. The reason we didn't include it is because late last week, Soho Rep abruptly closed their Walker Space Theater, where that production was supposed to take place. They really have not gone into much detail as to why. There have been many, many rumblings about what could have been going on behind the scenes there, but they haven't said anything officially. But I know this is a blow for this production and a place that has seen a lot of really fun and inventive shows throughout the years. So, sucks for Soho Rep, and I'm sorry for everyone involved with My Name is Gideon, but apparently Soho Rep had to do what it had to do.
Yeah, it's shocking because Soho Rep is such a staple in New York, performing over 25 some odd years, and we'll have to see if the company can recover financially from this. Is this type of thing that could go either way, and we hope that there's some way to make this these productions that have been orphaned whole and see them in some other stages. We'll have to see if somebody steps in this week and if they're able to pull a rabbit out of a hat here. We hope the best for everybody involved there.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so next up, Grease 2. Grease 2, that's the cool rider one?
Oh, is it ever, James? Is it ever?
Is really that the thing up next for Tommy Kail?
Well, I'm pretty sure that it was said mostly in jest, but last week, People, the magazine, not the vague, not real, many people are saying thing that a certain presidential candidate does, but People magazine reported that recent Emmy winners Thomas Kail and Alex Radzinski had been considering the unfairly maligned movie sequel as a follow-up to their fantastic Grease Live on Fox. Kail said that they have already started working on and planning how they would stage certain numbers from the film. And they did say that if this happens, they would love to have Michelle Pfeiffer, who starred in the original film opposite Maxwell Caulfield, as a cameo in the production. When people pushed to see that if this was actually something that Fox was on board for, Kale said, "No one has said no." James, first off, I can only imagine how excited this made our friend David Levy, who has a podcast going through the entire soundtrack of Grease 2. He's done cabaret shows about Grease 2. His podcast is called Soundtrack Song by Song. We'll have a link in the show notes at BroadwayRadio.com. But I personally have also long maintained that Grease 2 is a better film than the original. What say you?
Wow. Wow. But Grease 2 doesn't adhere to that meme that was going around that Grease 1 was Grease, the original Grease was the film that happened in Sandy's imagination. Do you tell me about that meme, or was it somebody else?
Yeah, no, we talked about it on the show, actually. So yeah, the idea was that the reason the ending makes absolutely no sense and that they flew away in a car was because it was actually a fever dream happening in Sandy's head as she was dying, because Danny actually couldn't save her from drowning like they sing about in Summer Nights. Of course, Grease 2 puts that all to bed, because Grease 2 features Frenchie, who mentions Sandy, and if she had actually died, Sandy never would have gone to school at Rydell, so she wouldn't actually know Frenchie. So, poo on that.
Yeah. Well, we could wait to see. Did Patrick's second interview with Tommy Kail come out? I don't remember hearing it or seeing it. And I'd imagine that Patrick would have talked in depth about the Grease thing. And
yes.
And perhaps so. Maybe we'll have to keep our eyes on the Theater People podcast to see if we have some breaking news coming out of there.
If I'm going to stake a claim on this. If Grease 2 is actually the next live musical that Thomas Kail and Alex Radzinski do for Fox, it'll break something. I don't know what it'll break, but that will be breaking news in every possible sense of the word. I can't imagine this actually happens, but God, am I rooting for it.
Perhaps it'll be starring Grumpy Cat.
Wash your mouth out with soap, James.
All right. Well, I better get out of here then. So why don't you get us out of here, Matt?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. And you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for starting your Monday off with us. Get your spiced pumpkin lattes. It's October, and we will talk to you tomorrow.